Gospel according to Matthew, chapter 5, verses 38 to 48. You've heard it said that eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth, but I say this to you, offer no resistance to the wicked. On the contrary, if anyone hits you on the right cheek, offer the other as well. If someone wishes to go to law with you to get your tunic, let him go to law, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone requires you to go 1 mile, go 2 miles. Give to anyone who asks, and if anyone wants to borrow, do not turn away. You've heard it said, you will love your neighbor and hate your enemy. I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven. For he causes his sun to rise on the bad as well as the good, and sends down the rain to fall on the upright and the wicked as well. For if you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Do not even the tax collectors do as much? And if you save your greetings for your brothers and sisters, are you doing anything exceptional? Do not even the Gentiles do as much? You must therefore be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. The Gospel of the Lord, and that's from the Jerusalem Bible. It seems to me that one of the most difficult things, at least for me, is to try to see if I can't live up to my Christian commitment when it's concrete. I find that it's easy enough to love generically, but not so easy to love specifically. And our admonition, our directives from the gospel, make it very clear that what we're asked to be is specific lovers of those who are both friend and enemy, that we are not to discriminate, that we're not to set some aside as worthy of our love because we'll get it back from them, and others not so worthy because they've offended us in some way. I find that extremely difficult. It's much easier to kind of draw a line and say that I'm going to take the interests and the concerns of some people and attend to them. I'm going to take the needs and concerns of other people and very consciously overlook them or reject them. This set of standards that comes in this fifth chapter of Matthew's gospel is intimidating, to say the least. Jesus makes no such distinctions for levity, no such distinctions for flexibility with regard to what happens. Rather, he says to us, this is how I want you to behave, and I want that behavior to mark your life so that they'll recognize people by the way you behave. And that means for Jesus, they'll recognize us by our love. I have a brother-in-law who was a career military officer and very peaceful, very delightful guy. I think if the military were full of people like him, I'd feel really good about it. But he rarely raised his voice. But once in a while, he would need to say something to his son that was unambiguous, and he wanted to make sure that he knew that he had no choice. So when those few moments came around, he would stand up and say, Kevin, this is not optional. And immediately Kevin would respond by doing whatever it was his father or his mother had asked him to do. Living the life of a Christian with this incredible attitude of love and respect and gratitude and so forth, forgiveness, is something that is extraordinary. Very few people are asked to do that. And even among those who are asked to do it, those of us who are asked to do it as Christians, we find it, at least I find it, very difficult. Let me take for a couple of minutes on this celebration of the 4th of July some of the situations that we faced recently. There was an awful lot of flap, an awful lot of unpleasant exchange that occurred over some of the incidents recently related to abortion and the president, or the right to life and some of the laws and so forth that he seemed to be espousing. There was never an opportunity, at least from my point of view, for people to sit and to talk about what was happening and to see if there wouldn't be a loving way in which to raise these issues and discuss them with care and concern, letting the president and others who walked with him know how painful and how hurtful it is for us to have to turn our backs on this good man and all the good things he's doing, because he's also doing some things that we think are wrong, that is, his attitude toward the dignity of the human person. It seems to me that if we were to really reach out with love, we could establish the means whereby we could dialogue some of these things, talk about them carefully, and see if there wouldn't be a way for each of us to bend a little. One of the real frustrations that I have felt continually about the issue of abortion, and particularly the very right-wing Catholic and other groups that tend to be focused on this whole idea of the right to life, the thing that's bothered me is that what we say essentially to a man like Obama, who's got a whole series of principles that he's trying to follow, that the thing that we're concerned about, Mr. President, is birth. And you seem to want us to be concerned about other things. And then we stop. We stop listening. We stop loving. We stop respecting. We stop doing any of those things because he doesn't seem to be pro-birth. What he's saying to us is, listen to me. Yes, you're right. I'm not going to stop at pro-birth. I'm going to say that my position is what you really ought to be calling pro-life. That is, I am for peace. I'm for the elimination of poverty. I'm for the elimination of this huge crowd of people who can't afford health care. I mean, it just goes on and on, that he's looking for a broader kind of justice that should touch the hearts of the people and affect their lives. And some of us are saying, I don't want to talk about any of that. I've turned my back on you because you won't accept this one thing that I hold out as inflexible, this one thing that I hold out as substantive to the point that nothing else can be examined without first acquiescing to my position in this particular matter. The president and many people, and I think I'm going to consider myself part of that, is that I really feel that I am pro-life and in the model of Cardinal Bernardine, the seamless garment, because I want the child to be born. Yes, I think that is foundational, but I also think what we've been called to do is to examine the whole life situation involved and to see if we can't make sure that we can really prepare a world that allows for the life of this child, the life that will grow into maturity, the life that will require food and schooling and all the other kinds of things, and that we don't simply stand there pounding our feet and demanding that we let everyone be born who should be born. Now, that's a kind of an unusual way of looking at this, and yet it seems to me that the command that we get from Jesus is one of these unambiguous commands, and that is we need to reach out in an unrestricted kind of love, in a non-discriminatory kind of love, and offer it to all people so that there can be the basis for dialogue, that we can recognize that when two of us are looking for the same thing, that is, the health and the welfare of the human person, then we can carry on a discussion. I think in many cases what we've done is become self-righteous. We feel that we've been given a lot, which is true. We feel that we've been given a directive and that we have the right to interpret that directive according to our own set of guidelines and principles and then to impose that directive on everyone else. Some of us feel, and I don't know what the president's internal disposition is, that yes, I love, and I love you, and I love you specifically, not just generically, but in that love is the concern for the welfare of the human person, for all of you, and for everything that you are. Therefore, I can't stop if you won't let me discuss beyond the idea that this child should be born. Maybe, I know that people will disagree with that, But, you know, people disagree with Jesus on lots and lots of fronts. And again, remember what he said. You might have thought one way, but I'm going to tell you it's a different way to think about things. You're going to need to recognize that life is different, that situations are different, and that you have to establish a different set of criteria in order for you to follow me and to walk with me without having any kind of, without stumbling, let me put it that way. And you will stumble if you begin to take my directive and parse it and start dividing it up and making a decision as how it's to be interpreted and how it's not to be interpreted. Each one of us has been told to love absolutely, unreservedly, without any kind of discrimination, to love so that we will be recognized by people as those people who love one another. And in the context of that love, that undiscriminatory love, we can then sit down as brothers and sisters and talk about how that love works itself out in our present day. If the 4th of July means anything, it's that we really need to recognize that we are in a country with incredible gifts and dispositions that should allow us to have that kind of discussion, that kind of free discussion that allows us to find the good and to avoid the evil. When we start thinking about the 4th of July and all that that means, and we listen to this reading from Matthew where we're told what we need to do in order to be sister and brother to one another and therefore sister and brother to Jesus, we need to recognize that a lot of us will have to make a lot of changes. And some of those changes will be to open our minds and our hearts to other people, to refuse to pass judgment on them about their sexuality, about how they interpret an issue, one issue or another, and rather go directly to the thing that unifies us, and that's this common love for Jesus. We can talk to one another, we can talk about one another, we can live and work with one another, because both of us are loved by Jesus. Those of us who are the good and those of us who are not quite the good. That sun and that rain shine on all of us. So having received these wonderful gifts from God and this challenge and this invitation from Jesus to love one another because we have been loved by him, let's not forget that that means that we need to be open to anything that comes our way and to do our best to respond to it, having in mind the clear knowledge that Jesus loves every one of us and gives every one of us the opportunity to walk with him as a brother or as a sister. That we are not given a litmus test, we are not given a set of questionnaires to complete. What we're simply asked to do is love one another. That's what we've all been commanded to do, and what we celebrate on this 4th of July, this Day of Independence, is the independence from the fear that would prevent us from carrying on that life of love. So happy 4th of July, happy day of freedom and independence, and happy are those who are loved by the Lord, given by the Lord this freedom and this sense of maturity that will allow us to let other people say, my goodness, see how those people love one another. Blessings on all.